This is Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Empire at the crossroads. Start a new nuclear arms race or invest in human and environmental needs.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no country.
I'd like to imagine no borders, no war. Well, we're going to set our sights on some of that imagination in the next segment. Joseph Gerson is a member of, he serves as the American Friends Service Committee's Disarmament Coordinator, as Director of Programs in New England, and as Director of the Peace and Economic Security Program. He plays a leading role in building collaborations among U.S., Asian, and European peace and nuclear weapons abolition movements. And our guest, Raina Braun, is co-president of the International Peace Bureau and one of the main organizers of the World Congress of the IPB for disarmament and for climate justice and peace. He is a recognized leader of the German and European peace movements and against nuclear weapons, which he has been actively involved with since 1982. And in 1983, he became executive director for Scientists for Peace and Sustainability in Germany. And since 1991, he has also worked with the International Network of Engineers and Scientists for Global Responsibility. He's author of several books, including Einstein and Peace. And I must admit, you can't see him, but he's got this incredible tie with a picture of Albert Einstein on it. And was that MC Square?
It's MC Square.
Yeah. Ah, of course. It's great. So he's visual towards the task of peace and justice and anti-nuke. And we are really honored to have Raina Braun and Joseph Gerson. And now, Empire at the Crossroads. Start a new nuclear arms race or invest in human and environmental needs? Ah, that's the question. And that's the question we're going to put to Raina Braun and Joseph Gerson. And I want to start, though, with, of course, a headline. Gee whiz, there's so many of them. Ah, we'll start with United States and allies boycott UN talks for a treaty to ban nuclear weapons.
You know, the very positive point is that we have these negotiations at the United Nations about prohibition of nuclear weapons, and that more than 130 countries of the world take part at these negotiations. And we will have a contract, a treaty. That is a very positive step. Never in history we had such negotiations, and never in history we had such big influence and impact from governments and from civil society to work on these points. You know, and it is absolutely needed, because we should never forget what happened in Hiroshima. You know, Hiroshima has one bomb. Today we have 15,000 of the nuclear weapons. And the time can come again that we have nuclear weapons in action. And we have to do everything that this will never happen. I think this is our responsibility for the children and for the survivors of Hiroshima. We should never forget that immediately after the bomb, 300,000 people were dead. Until today, people are suffering and dying. Even in the third generation, the rate of cancer in Hiroshima and the surroundings is much higher than in every part of the world. So our responsibility is to do everything to avoid, again, nuclear actions and to ban nuclear weapons. And when the governments of countries like Great Britain and US say that they want not to take part at these negotiations, that is totally irresponsible. And it is really against human being and their development. And we never will understand why governments, which are connected to the life of people, will not negotiate for banning weapons which can kill the whole planet.
Just to say, last night I was talking with a young woman from Israel who's in the States, and she was talking about how being outside of Israel, she can begin to see it much more clearly, that the limitations of living within Israel aren't there. And the same applies to us here in the United States. If you go to some of these meetings, the negotiations going on now as the high-level meeting on nuclear disarmament a couple of years ago, and remarkably, what you see is just how isolated the United States and the other nuclear weapons states are. The majority of people in the world understand the importance of getting rid of these weapons. You know, we're in a situation where, you know, it's like, you know, the big stick and we're not going to give it up. The reality is that in addition to the pressure we get from all these other countries, in the end, we have to do that work within the United States. Just as the women before us were talking about how they were working for women's reproductive rights, you don't get change unless you do the organizing, the education, the movement building. And one of the reasons we've been touring right around the country has been to help people understand the urgency of this and to kind of build in a new way the movements we've had in the past that have really prevailed on questions of nuclear weapons and nuclear war.
Raina, I want to push a little further. Just the UN ambassador said that this is not the right time to outlaw nuclear arms. The United States led a group of dozens of nations, actually, that boycotted talks at the Global Organization for a Treaty that would ban the weapons, and they focused on the issue of North Korea's development of nuclear weapons. And, of course, the Obama administration also had voted against convening these anti-nuclear weapons treaty conferences. So it's not just the Trump administration. So what do you say in response to them that this is not a prudent move? This is not a move that does not put the safety, for example, of the United States in jeopardy. And I see you have a smile on your face already.
You know, my first part of the answer is whenever it is the right time. And, you know, we are 70 years after the bombing. And we have now 15,000 nuclear weapons.
And March 11th was the anniversary of Fukushima as well.
And, you know, we have 15,000 nuclear weapons. We have a modernization program which will cost in the next 30 years $1 trillion U.S. dollars by all the nuclear weapons country. So my easy question is to the ambassador, can you imagine a better time than now? You know, we have a world which needs a lot of money for solving the global problems, the climate problem, and we are putting all this money to develop new nuclear weapons. My second question is, when North Korea and the United States and all the other nuclear weapons countries are not sitting together, how we can get rid of these nuclear weapons? So the first step must be to sit together. And negotiations mean to sit together at one table and develop a contract which reduces the fear of all countries, in which ban the weapons in all countries. And for that, we need a huge and intensive verification project and program. But we develop such a program. We have such a program. You have not trust North Korea. You have to control North Korea. And we have to control the United States, and North Korea has not to trust the United States. So this is a given and taking. But for the first step must be to sit together at the negotiation table on who is not going to the table, who don't want to get rid of the nuclear weapons.
So Martin Luther King's Beyond Vietnam speech, I've been reading it pretty carefully. One of the things you see in there is the outrage that President Johnson and others were saying, don't go too fast. The time isn't right. You know, those in power always want to maintain their power and slow any change. The reality is that Ambassador Haley's statement and theatrics there, total embarrassment. I mean, the rest of the world is almost laughing at us that she did this, and it just reinforces the commitment of other countries to work for this. And then just, again, to deal with realities that most Americans are unaware of, we have to ask the question, why has North Korea developed nuclear weapons? You know, they could be spending their money on other things. The reality, and you don't have to love Kim Jong-un to try to understand why they do what they do. the reality is that, you know, you go back to the Korean War, the United States destroyed more than 90% of all the structures in North Korea. And during that war, we prepared and threatened to attack North Korea with nuclear weapons. But it didn't end then. You know, since the end of that war, the United States has prepared or threatened to attack North Korea with nuclear weapons at least 9 times. In one case, the U.S. commander in South Korea thought that nuclear attack was so inevitable, so urgent, he asked for authority to launch his weapons without having to wait for Washington. So in this circumstance, the North Koreans have taken steps to create deterrence. The reality is they have the potential to have maybe 20 nuclear weapons. We have total about 7,000 in our arsenal. So I think we need to see things in their proper perspective. We always have a new Hitler, a new dragon put before us to mobilize us, so we don't ask questions about our own policy, our own systems. And as Reiner was saying, the way forward, and as the Chinese are telling us right now, the way forward is to sit down and have the hard negotiations, recognize that the North Korean government is not going to disappear overnight, which is what Obama was waiting for, and move to common security. I mean, you have peace negotiations between enemies, not between friends.
Ryan, I know that there were 2,000 scientists that also signed an open letter in enforcing the talks, and it's one of the opening statements was, "We scientists bear a special responsibility for nuclear weapons since it was scientists who invented them and discovered their effects, which are even more horrific than first thought."
You never forget, you know, one of the first who was protesting against nuclear weapons was Albert Einstein. He developed, and the first committee in the United States of scientists protesting against the nuclear weapons. But it is definitely true. Without scientists, we do not know how nuclear weapons were functioning. It were scientists which played the leading role in developing the first nuclear weapons. So there's a specific responsibility of scientists now to protest against these weapons, because scientists know how dangerous are these nuclear weapons. So I'm really proud of that colleagues of mine are developing this letter and are a part of these negotiations. And quite a lot of scientists are taking part of the protest actions, helping us to convince the public with the critical argument of scientists, with their knowledge, that nuclear weapons are not any longer responsible. Every physician knows what are the consequences of radioactivity, how radioactivity are destroying the environment and develop cancer for many generations. Chemists know what are the chemical consequences of the destroying of the environment and the relations to the human body. So that is the background of the engagement and scientists, and I'm proud that we have a scientific organization like PAGWASH, which got the Nobel Peace Prize, who is constantly working against nuclear weapons. This is a specific responsibility. This unites scientists and doctors, because we have also the IPPNW, which is intensive sentence. We cannot help you in a nuclear war. And this is the background that we are saying either human beings will survive and the planet, or nuclear weapons, both together on the planet, will not work in the future.
You know, one of the other things you kind of mentioned, context, and I'm just thinking now of the revving up, the saber rattling, really, which, interestingly, is coming from the Democratic Party in particular, opportunistically, around Russia. And there are those who certainly believe that the U.S.-NATO conflicts with Russia could trigger a World War III, if you will, and unleash nuclear weapons, among other things. I'm just interested in your thoughts, and also the European peace movement, anti-nuclear movement in relationship to conventional warfare and the kind of provocations now.
You know, when we are discussing our relations to Russia, we should never forget that in 1990 we agreed that the border of NATO would be the border of Germany to the east. And now, in these 25 years, the NATO was marching to the east, not Russia to the west. So we were enlarging our area with our influence. And for the first time in history, we have now German, Russian, French and British troops at the border to Russia. To understand what this means for Russia, we should never forget that Russia was occupied by the German fascists, 1941, and at the end, 27 million Soviet Union people died, and the area between Warsaw and Moscow was totally destroyed. There was no stone on the others. And this should never happen again. This is a common sense in the whole country. You can ask every Russian citizen, never again. And now we have these troops at the border. This is a provocation and a confrontation. And all the next steps which we are now fearing are the consequences of this march to from the west to the east. And vice versa, Russian troops, Soviet Union troops, were left these areas. They left Germany. 500,000 Russian soldiers were going home in the year 1990-92, including 3,700 tanks and nuclear weapons. This was the biggest disarmament step in Europe that ever happened. So we should be very careful accusing Russia. We should look at ourselves, and then we will see what to do. And what are the consequences? The consequences could only be, you know, that we are sitting together and try to find a way for reducing this confrontation. And this means we have to take in care that Russia has legitimate political interests, like the West has legitimate political interests. And then we have to see how we can find common interests and common agreements for solving this difficult situation. And we have done this in the 70s, and this was very positive for the development of Europe. And this finally brought Gorbachev to power. And this again develop the disarmament process. With confrontation, we will not come any step further. We need much more cooperation in Europe, and this includes negotiations. Mm-hmm. And so also, everyone has to sit together to ban the nuclear weapons.
Yeah, so just to kind of reinforce that, I mean, I think people need to be clear, you don't need to love Putin to share this analysis. I mean, Putin, in many ways, is a nasty guy. But to step back, and you know, the agreement that Reiner was talking about, I mean, it was fundamental. I mean, it was one of the most important deals of the 20th century, right? And then Bill Clinton comes in and violates it. It's interesting. I was reading a excerpts from a press conference that Putin did a couple of years ago, before the whole brouhaha with our elections. And what he says is, you know, if you push a spring too tight, it's going to snap back. So, you know, the reality is under this kind of pressure, and not only the expansion, but the U.S. dominance in conventional weapon, high-tech weaponry, space weaponry, nuclear weaponry, you know, Russia, I think, is feeling in a box. And you know, they're in a situation, they're also boycotting these negotiations at the U.N., and they say, well, the reason we're boycotting is, you know, we're under threat. We have to be realistic here. We were close to nuclear war, you know, in the 80s, and it was because people like Olof Palme and people in our streets said, look, we can coexist, we can do negotiations, and it was out of that process you came with ultimately the INF Treaty and the end of the Cold War. So again, I think we need to kind of break through some of the blinders that we're constantly getting. As Reiner was saying, we need to understand the interests on the other side. Recognize our government, boy, we know it's got a lot of problems. But, you know, again, pushing for negotiations that can help to ensure our security.
I'm interested in the thoughts of the European peace movement. Also, as we look at now, even the New York Times has just made some acknowledgement of the quote-unquote grim civilian toll of U.S.-led airstrikes in Mosul, which reflects a new urgency in the fight. The issue of conventional warfare, which has really become a hop, skip, and jump away from the complete devastation of populations, the drone strikes, the bunker busters, and so on. The reaction and response of the European peace movement.
You know, let me say it in one sentence. We are deeply disappointed what Obama has done by the drones. You know, all the drones attacks in the world are going about the U.S. airbase in Germany called Ramstein. It's the biggest U.S. airbase out of the United States. And because of the lips of the world, all these drones orders must get an agreement from a German signal to come to the goal. So we are deeply involved in this drones war. And, you know, the drones war is a war against civilians. 80% which were killed was are civilians. You have up to now about 10,000 killed people. Between 8,000 and 9,000 are civilians. And this was enlarged in the first weeks by Trump. You know, Obama was doing a drones attack all 5 days. Obama is doing 5 drones attacks in 2 days. So Trump is doing 5 drone attacks in 2 days. So we have a really enlargement. And this is really a deep concern in Europe that we don't want to have it. And yeah, we have a lot of actions around Rammstein against this. But, you know, about fear, I think we really should be have fear for the right things. You know, conventional war, the NATO is spending $800 billion per year for military purposes. The budget of Russia is $54 billion. This is the same amount your president wants to have additional budget for military purposes. This is the brutal reality of the world. We have about 765 military bases of the United States and NATO, mainly around Russia and China. Russia has 5 military bases. China has 2 military bases out of the country. Now I can ask the question, who should have fear from whom? And then we are coming much nearer to the reality. But, you know, with fear you cannot work, you cannot live. We need again the understanding that we can solve the global problems of this world only together. You know, last year the United Nations decided about the Sustainable Development Goals, that we want to overcome poverty, hunger, develop clear water, develop more education, healthcare all over the world, to overcome this dividing system in the world between poor and rich. But, you know, who should pay for the Sustainable Development Goals when we are spending $1.7 trillion per year for military purposes? Who should pay it? You know, there was a huge UN conference in Addis Ababa last year. All the guys were sitting together 1 week discussing how to finance the Sustainable Development Goals. Many ideas come on the table, but no solution, no agreement at the end. The easiest idea to say, let us reduce the military budget by 10% every year the next 10 years and use this money for climate and for solving the Sustainable Development Goals. It was not mentioned by the government. This shows that we need the peace movement, that we need much more pressure. And I'm so happy that we have at the United Nations today, by these negotiations, a common agreement between civil society, peace movement, and 130 governments to go for prohibition of nuclear weapons. And I hope that this is also a sign for future common actions in the direction of peace and disarmament.
Will 2017 be the year nuclear weapons are banned?
No, but it is a new sign of hope. And, you know, sign of hopes we need now, above all after the election of Trump. And for me, it is one sign of hope, like the actions in your country on January 20th and 21st were really signs of hope for all movement and all activists all around the world. And now we have to think and discuss, and we are doing this today, all the days and nights, how we can develop again a movement in the world which is near to the movement we had in the 15th of February 2003, when 50 million people were marching on the world, and really give a new impression what peace movement can do. You remember you were quoting the New York Times. The headline of the New York Times, I think on the next day or 2 days later, was peace movement, the second superpower in the world. This was a little bit too much for honor for us, but this shows the way we have to go. And when we can go this way together with so many governments in the world as possible, this is a new sign of hope and a new sign of change. And, you know, that is what we need. We are not in the position that we are can be too optimistic, but we have a chance and we should use the chance.
We have to run just as hard as we can just to stay in the same place or get back to where we were when there was that wonderful headline that thought that the peace and anti-nuclear movement was a contender for the real superpower, as well as it should be. And we have about 30 seconds. I just want to give you the last word.
Well, a very short word. Be a part of the peace movement. Be active yourself. We need everyone. Without the help of the big mass of people in the world, we will not come nearer to our big game for a world without war.
Our comrade, Raina Braun, who we really thank you for your work. We're extremely honored to have a compatriot of the peace and justice movement from Europe here. And I really, that's one of the great ties I've ever seen with the Albert Einstein. And Joseph Gerson, we've had you on before. We will continue because your activity for peace and justice is absolutely formidable, critical. And we all want to give our hands to struggle for the movement for peace and justice and fight like crazy until we got it. This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.